We may be very familiar with this account of Jesus being tempted in the desert by the devil, because we reflect on this event every year on the first Sunday of Lent, which is today, first Sunday of Lent. And Jesus' experience on that occasion sets the course for what we do in this holy season. Why does Lent last for 40 days? Because Jesus was in the desert for 40 days. Why do we pray and fast during Lent? Because Jesus prayed and fasted in the desert. And Jesus was tempted in the desert, which gives us an insight into the universal human experience of temptation. And it also gives us an opportunity to reflect on this business of temptation. Temptation is an invitation, right? An invitation to sin, to do or to think or to say something that we know is wrong. Now, for starters, it's very important to distinguish between temptation and sin. They're two different things, even though they're related. They're two different things. And it's very clear in Jesus' case, he was tempted, but he never sinned. So temptation and sin don't have to go together. Temptation precedes sin, right? Temptation is an invitation to sin. It makes sin look good to us. Some people feel guilty every time they're tempted. That's not healthy. That's not a healthy way to live, because it makes people feel like they're sinning all the time. And they're not necessarily. They're just being tempted. When we feel angry, let's say at corruption in the government, or when we feel attracted to a beautiful person, or when we feel curious about other people's wrongdoing, or when we feel sad because others succeed and seem to surpass us, that's just normal human emotions. That's just a normal human response. It comes automatically. That's the raw material for sin. But it's not sin unless we choose to give in to it. Then it becomes sin. That's the difference. Sin is chosen. Temptation comes unchosen. Well, if we invite temptation, that's already a sin. We're putting ourselves in the near occasion of sin. Now, some people think they're guilty all the time. Other people, and actually more people, fall into this category. They go to the other extreme. Instead of thinking that everything is a sin, they tell themselves that practically nothing is a sin. These are the people who always have a good excuse for what they do, who never admit to being wrong, or almost never, who never go to confession, who blame others for everything, who deny their own part in any wrongdoing. We all do this sometimes. We all have this tendency to minimize sin. We don't want to face our sins. We don't want to take them seriously, so we just don't think about them. Well, that's where Lent comes in, right? Lent gives us an opportunity to break these spiritually unhealthy habits in relation to sin. Okay, now the first temptation and the first sin, you could call the prototype of sin, is what we just heard about in the first reading, the story of our first parents in the Garden of Eden. They're in the beginning of the book of Genesis. What happened? Adam and Eve were in a beautiful garden full of many beautiful fruit trees, all beautiful, but not all good to eat. At least one of them was not good to eat, forbidden. Along comes the tempter, the serpent, who makes the woman question God's goodness, and then lies about the consequences of disobedience to God. And this is always what happens with temptation. That's why this story in Genesis tells us a lot. This is what always happens with temptation, whether we're being tempted by the devil, or whether we're being tempted by a friend, or so-called friend, or a colleague, or whether we're being tempted by something we see online, or whether we're being tempted by our own natural desires. The idea comes to us somehow that something that is not good is actually good. And that God's guidance about this thing, this action or this whatever behavior, God's guidance is somehow not trustworthy. We have a better idea than God. That's where temptation comes in. And we know what comes next, both in the Genesis story and in our own personal experience. Temptation leads to sin. And sin is never the great outcome that we expected. When we sin, we're not happy. And that's what we hope would happen, but it never works. We're worse off when we sin, we're worse off than before we were tempted. It's like going downhill rather than uphill. It's going backward instead of forward. That's sin. And then the ultimate consequence of sin is death. That's very clear from the Bible. Through sin, death entered into the story of the human family. What used to be a beautiful garden has become a harsh desert. The human family has been stripped of its original innocence and dignity, left naked. Adam and Eve, in this reading we just heard, they realize something went wrong, something's missing now. Instead of being more glorious, instead of being like gods, which is what the serpent said, they're naked and they have to hide themselves. So that's the pattern. And it's a very clear pattern. Temptation, sin, death. Temptation, sin, death. Over and over again. From the very beginning up until right now, up until today, right now, temptation, sin, death. We keep doing this. We keep falling into this same destructive pattern. We keep falling for the lie of sin. How can we break this cycle? How can we free ourselves from this pattern or this habit? Well, on our own, we can't. If we could, we would have by now. If it was that easy to just break the pattern, change our ways, it's not that easy. Because the problem is not just, you know, out there. It's not just in theory or on paper. The problem is right in us, in our own nature. It's been warped by sin. And the tempter is much smarter and much more powerful than we are. The key to breaking this sin cycle is Jesus Christ the Lord. He's absolutely the key. He's the victor over temptation, over sin, over death. And today's gospel gives us some early evidence of his victory. The ultimate victory, of course, is on the cross and the resurrection. But here, at the beginning, even before his public ministry, we see Jesus already victorious over temptation. This also gives us some wonderful lessons about how to deal with temptation. Jesus was repeatedly tempted by the devil, just as we all are. It's part of human experience. Now, we might wonder why Jesus went into the desert to be tempted in the first place. And we might wonder why the devil bothered to tempt him at all. Didn't he know that he would lose? Well, the gospel tells us why Jesus was there. It says here, Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. He deliberately went there. He specifically went there to take on the devil in order to defeat him. That's why he went. You could think of it this way. If you think of a bully who claims to be in charge of the neighborhood or the classroom or the playground or whatever, and everybody's afraid of him because he's stronger. When somebody stronger than the bully comes along and wants to show the bully that he can no longer terrorize everybody, he's no longer in charge, he calls him out. He says, in effect, okay, you think you're so tough. Well, prove it. Why don't you show us if you're really that strong? Bring on your best weapon. Take your best shot at me. See if you can beat me. That's what the challenger does. And even if the bully thinks that he can't beat this new opponent, he will always take the challenge. The bully will always take the challenge. He can't back down. Now, maybe it's not a perfect analogy, but something like that is what happens here in the desert. The devil is so proud that he won't back down. He won't give up. He won't admit that he's defeated. He keeps trying to tempt. And this is what he always does. He keeps trying to tempt. He'll even tempt the Son of God, which is an obvious losing project. And Jesus beats him every single time. He defeats every single temptation. The temptation to comfort and food, the temptation to look good, to be liked, even the temptation to be the most powerful and richest man in the whole world. No problem for Jesus. He easily overcomes the temptation. Satan gives his best shot. He tries his hardest. He's easily defeated. So Jesus is tempted, yes, but he never sins. He breaks that age-old cycle, temptation, sin, death. It doesn't have to be temptation, sin, death. Now it's temptation, victory, because of Jesus Christ. Temptation, victory. We're better off with the victory over temptation now, because of Jesus Christ. Now the question becomes, how does this victory of Jesus Christ become our victory? It's one thing to say Jesus defeated Satan, defeated temptation. What about us? Well, first of all, Jesus did it for us in the first place, and he very freely gives us a share in his victory, starting with baptism, which for most of us happened when we were not even aware of it. We were already given a share in the victory, but then we have to choose the victory, which is what we do by choosing to follow Jesus. This is where Lent comes in, this great season of Lent. Lent is for those who want to follow Jesus, those who want to be disciples, those who want to follow him but find it difficult because they are repeatedly tempted and they sometimes find themselves sinning again. Lent is for sinners. Jesus came for sinners, not for the righteous. He came as the solution to our sin problem. Okay, in Lent we are given three fundamental disciplines, and we were given these were outlined for us on Ash Wednesday: prayer, fasting, almsgiving. Prayer, fasting, love of neighbor, charity. On this first Sunday, because we're really still at the beginning of the season, it's very important for us to make clear, practical decisions of how we're going to pray, how we're going to fast or deny ourselves, how we're going to practice love of neighbor. There's many, many options. There's many things we can do. We have to choose some of them. I'm just going to mention one Lenten discipline, which has been strongly recommended by the Catholic Bishops' Conference of the Philippines, the CBCP. You might have seen some mention of this because all the news, even the secular news outlets, picked up on this earlier this week or last week. The bishops encourage us all to practice a specific kind of fasting which is suited to our own times. Now, fasting usually refers to food, right? Refraining from some food or eating less food or not eating food at all for a certain period of time. But fasting, more broadly, means detaching ourselves from anything that interferes with our relationship with God. Well, what is the most interfering? What is the most distracting, most powerful influence in modern life? Digital media, social media, internet, gadgets. That's what distracts people. That's what takes up people's time and attention. So the suggestion of the bishops is that we take on what they call a digital media fast. Digital media fast. Now, maybe we can all see the wisdom of this, because I think almost everybody overuses the digital media. The statistics on how much we use the internet and the social media are really staggering. The worldwide average for internet use is 6 hours, 32 minutes every day. That's the worldwide average. In the Philippines, the average is 8 hours, 52 minutes every day. When I read that, I just looked it up, a study from last year. I don't even know if I can believe it. That's almost 9 hours a day. Now, of course, that includes work time. It includes playing background music. It includes just staying connected with loved ones and whatnot. Now, some uses of digital media are definitely evil. That's a different thing. You know, that's not a matter of fasting. We shouldn't do that at all anyway. So all the scamming and the gambling and the pornography and the hatred and the violence and the lies and prejudices and all that stuff, there's a lot of it that we shouldn't use at all. But there's a lot of good uses, a lot of good uses of the digital media. In fact, I went to Google to look up the bishop's statement because I didn't know, I heard about it, but I wanted to read it. So I had to go to the social media. The problem is overuse, right? Overuse. That's why fasting is a good response. We're wasting too much time with the digital media. Go back to the statistics. One of the main reasons people use social media is filling in spare time. So that's the reality these days. How do we use this sacred time of Lent more profitably, more fruitfully? Well, if we cut back on wasting time on social media, then we'll have more time for prayer, more time for reading, more time for service, more time for relationships, friendships. And that's what the bishops are recommending. They give a number of practical ways. I'll just read this from the document. Practical ways to practice digital media fasting. First of all, avoid phone use before sleep and upon waking. So at the very end of the day, at the very beginning of the day, don't pick up the gadgets, because that just fills you right away with something that's not God. The first thing to do in the morning, pray. The last thing to do before sleeping, pray. Not gadgets. Okay, secondly, limit social media and streaming time. Limit the time. Don't let it go on forever. Third, observe device-free meals and gatherings. Device-free meals and gatherings. So put away the gadgets when you're with people in person. It's too rude to be looking at gadgets when you're in the presence of other people. Okay. Fourth, practice occasional 24-hour or weekend digital fasts. It's like retreats, you know? Take 24 hours, say, I won't use my gadgets for 24 hours. Just try it out. Some people can't do it, but it's a good practice. Five, remove distracting apps. Six, replace screen time with prayer, service, reading, or conversation. Okay, I won't read the whole thing, but this is one valuable practice, digital media fasting. Try it out. If you find it's hard to do, that means it's even more valuable, because if you have an over attachment to it, then it shows you have to cut it out. Okay, Lent is not only about what we don't do, and it's certainly not only about digital media fasting. It's about following Jesus. Following him more closely, better, joining in his victory over temptation, over sin, over death. So let's use this special grace-filled season, this time, to pray, to fast, to love more, to spend these 40 days with Jesus the Lord.